1, Episode 13. My guest today is Emma, and I'm going to end it there and hand it to Emma to introduce herself. Hi there, Emma.
Hello, Debbie. This is Emma Jo, and I'm a data science leader based in Boston. I am also a flautist.
Oh, flautist. Even the way you say it is gorgeous. Tell me when you first started playing the flute and why you chose this instrument over others.
I started playing the flute in elementary school. There was a school wind ensemble and my teacher asked me to join the band. My teacher actually first recommended saxophone to me, but I picked the flute because as a kid I wanted to hang out with my friend.
Beautiful. And I know that you're from China originally. Tell me about the first time you performed in public with the flute. Where were you? And what did you notice as a new public performer of the flute, which isn't an easy instrument at all, from what I understand?
Yeah. So the first time I performed was interesting. So besides the wind ensemble that I joined in elementary school, I stopped playing the flute for a few years during my teenage years, and I picked it up in college, and I kept practicing. So the real public that I performed in front of was actually the passersby in the New York subway station. I went busking there because when I lived in New York, I came across many musicians in the subway stations, and a lot of them were very impressive, and I stopped by to listen to their music. That made me want to do the same.
So what was that like? When I've also watched buskers, and I've really always admired their ability to stay focused, to be present with themselves and their music, with all of these distractions, people passing by, sounds from the subway or the street where they're standing and playing. What did you notice about yourself and your ability to stay present as you played, and then from the responses from your audience? How did you stay present?
Yeah, so when I went busking, it was very scary to begin with. And I had to break my shell and stand in front of people and start doing something that everyone in the subway station wasn't doing, which was walking. So yeah, I think taking the first step was difficult for me. But once I started, all I could think about was my music and what was in front of me. So I kept playing and kept playing. And I learned that I am actually more brave than I thought from this experience. And I don't care that much about what other people think while I was doing what I had passion in. I also found that people are generally very friendly and very nice to artists and musicians. And they would stop by and listen to my music, and some of them gave me very generous tips in my little bucket.
How cute. And so, like, what was the most generous one you received?
Let me think. I believe when I was playing in New York for the very first or second time, someone gave me $20.
Wow, that's a lot in New York. It's a very expensive city. Very generous.
Yes. Very generous.
And you noticed that people are generally kind. How did they show that kindness to you? Well, obviously from the tip, but what else? What else did you notice?
Yes, I think as a musician and as someone who performed, the best thing, the most rewarding thing is when people listen to you and they look engaged. That is very rewarding to me. To stay in the music with people and to be present in the music with people. And I do hope that my music made them happy or made them inspired, motivated, or anything on that day.
How lovely. And I don't know about you, and I've noticed when I coach leaders and mid-level managers wanting to boost their presence and their courage as a public speaker, and this has happened to me too, as a professor or as a course instructor or a workshop host, I found that when you get that positive engagement from the audience, your fears and your self-consciousness just evaporate like steam into a cold winter's Wisconsin day. What's there for you?
Yes, exactly. I think playing the flute performing is very similar to other situations in our life where we need to present in front of other people, like getting the affirmation or even the vibe, the positive vibe and the presence that you can feel from the atmosphere, from your audience is very rewarding, and it is the same in a lot of situations.
Yeah, it's like emotions have a contagion effect, both negative and positive ones. And seeing bobbing heads or smiles or a combination of the both, or even just seeing someone stop to pause to listen, I think has a very delightful contagion effect and can encourage us to do more of what we're already doing or just continue to manage that fear. I wondered, what did you learn about yourself and business? Or just as a leader, because you do manage a small team and you are a rising leader. How did any of these learnings show up for you at work, if at all? Or are you finding it's not impacting how you show up as a leader?
Yes, I believe so. For music performance and leadership are somewhat similar because, for example, when I prepare the music program for a particular performance, I need a lot of preparation work. I need practice. I need to design my program of the day, of the performance. And I need to be there, to be present, to immerse myself in the music so people can feel that power from me when I present. And also what's important is that what I show in music in front of people will be most welcomed when the content is relevant to my audience. So all of these tips or all of these things that we consider in music performance is similar to being a leader because we need a lot of thought, we need preparation, and we need to think about our audience.
Fantastic. So it's taught you audience-centeredness, agility, thoughtfulness, and just boosting that courage and presence by getting out of our comfort zone and doing something we love and in service of others. So these are all beautiful skills. I know, how do you choose your tunes as you stay audience-centered? And I guess we're getting soon to the work you're now doing at retirement homes, but how do you choose your tunes, especially when the audience can be so varied?
Yeah, I think about my audience first and think about what they are familiar with for music. For example, most recently I was invited back to this Fitch senior home in Melrose, Massachusetts to perform, and it was approaching the Christmas and holidays time. And as I thought about what I wanted to perform, I think the holiday music would be the best fit for senior people. And the exact music that we hear on the street during the Christmas season are definitely the music these people have been hearing throughout their lives. So I carefully picked about 18 pieces of Christmas and holiday music for them and created this 1 hour long program to perform for them, which was very welcome. And they wanted to invite me back again.
How gorgeous. How did you know? I'm sure I know, I've seen your recordings and we'll get to those in a moment, but how did you know the music was welcomed? What were the visible signs of delight in your audience?
Yes, so when I was playing, some of my audience were humming along or smiling. Some of them wheelchair, but it seemed like they could dance.
How cute.
They moved their hands and arms. And there was actually an old man who seemed to cry at one of my music. Although when I ended the performance, he came up to me and he told me that he had been wearing hearing aids for a very long time. He could hardly hear it when people talk, but when I played the flute, he could hear the music. And that was really warming to me.
How gorgeous, Emma. How rewarding for you. And I know that even though you're doing some really brave things as a flautist, including performing live on streets and subway stations in New York, and then in front of and doing remote performances for those in elderly homes, I wondered, how do you pull through out of fear if and when you do feel it, what do you tell yourself? For instance, you saw me before our call today do some singing, which was probably awful, or I do scales. Sometimes I stretch and do a little yoga just before I go live with a podcast or a high stakes moment. What about you? What's your process?
Yeah, so my process to be a little less scared or afraid, I guess I do get that stage fright even after so many years of playing and performing. It's like sometimes, in some years, I get up to 20 or 30 performances, like virtual performance or in-person performance.
That's a lot in a year.
Yeah. I believe a year or two ago, I had that many performances of the year in different circumstances. But yeah, I do still get the stage fright sometimes. So I believe that a good preparation is always important to me. And I go through my program time after time before the performance and write down some last minute note to remind myself in case I make some mistakes in the music. And also to get some good rest and get enough food before the performance, because it takes a lot of energy. And what's most important to be a little less scared is I need to immerse myself into the music. So I want to make sure I get in the mood. And when I think I'm doing a good job, when I think I deliver good music, I can feel the engagement from the audience, and that bounces back to me and makes me more brave and more confident about what I'm doing.
So beautiful. So you're staying very audience-centered and very intentional, knowing that you're bringing a gift.
Yes.
Yes, and providing your audiences a lovely punctuation to their day with some beautiful music that you've created.
Yeah, that's my goal.
That's so beautiful. And you've taken this really far, Emma, alongside your profession, alongside your professional work, I mean. You perform, like you told us, 30 times a year. Is that right? It's quite a lot.
Up to 30. Some years.
And yeah. You have a YouTube channel that you maintain, and with your permission, I'll add it to the show notes. You've also told me you played two of your friends' weddings. So I wondered, many of my clients, and I think my listeners, struggle with making time for things that we love. For me, that's art and my writing. For others, it's their sport or getting out in nature. What have you done, or what's your approach to ensure that you make time for your craft and even build it into something delightful for others to enjoy with you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I also have come across some friends who tell me that, well, you play the flute, I want to find time to play an instrument as well. But not everyone could carry their plans out. So I think from my perspective, a few things are important to actually take action and be persistent. So it is important to take the first baby step. Mm-hmm. And then there are community bands or there are music schools where people can get in the door of music. And I would also encourage people to take something that's not extremely difficult for them. For example, if a person has learned a little about violin when he or she was a kid, they may as well pick like guitar or a string instrument relative to a saxophone instead, because they have some basic knowledge about the type of thing they will do, so they will get less discouraged from it over time. It is also important to find like-minded people in the long run, so to keep things going. Or if you don't, that's okay. You can find meaning in what you do yourself, like serve the community. To find something that can give back energy to ourselves is important for us to persist in the thing we are doing in the long run.
Beautiful, beautiful advice. So I'm hearing prioritize it. Don't look, make the time. People say yes. I need to find the time, but recast the idea to I will make the time. And sometimes that may mean borrowing from something else, saying no to something.
Yeah.
And or joining like-minded people. So you have that accountability and you feel pulled to action.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a matter of prioritization as well. We only have 24 hours and 7 days. Mm-hmm. So can we practice music? Right.
Can I notice one thing too that I think has really helped you prioritize your music?
Yes, of course.
I mean, one, obviously you're clearly talented. I've listened to your videos and you're immensely gifted and I'm so happy for you that you kept your craft alive. But I think, too, you do add it to your brand. It is part of your brand. It's on your LinkedIn profile that you're this and that you're that. You do this in business and you are a flautist. We saw a lovely example with Miss Wisconsin becoming Miss USA, and in the talent pageant, part of the pageant, the contest, she played the violin beautifully and wowed the judges, not just with her talents, but also her well-roundedness, an overused word to define those who keep their crafts and their passions alive alongside the work they do. What say you? Is it an extra incentive for us all if we integrate our passions as part of our brand?
Yes, I believe so. I've always wanted to have more than one label on me. Mm. I like data. That is what I do at my job. Mm. But also I like music, I like arts, and I enjoy serving the community and giving back to people. Yeah, so that is what I'm trying to do. I want to be able to add more labels in my life because life is so beautiful. There's a lot of things that I'm interested in doing.
Beautiful. Imogel, it was such a pleasure having you on the Competency Number 5 show today. When's your next performance?
My next performance is to be determined.
To be determined. We're going to use some of the music that you've already recorded from some performances you've done for our show. Can you tell my listeners which piece of music we'll be using so they'll know what they're listening to?
It will be Chestnut Roasting, a good music for Christmas.
Oh, and why is that one of your favorites?
Because that is a very soothing and slow, beautiful piece of music. I noticed that one of my audiences was crying at this piece of music, and I feel like I would like to share it with people.
Well, thank you. We're really grateful already. And I do remember listening to this. It's absolutely beautiful, especially how you play it. Emma, thanks so much for coming to the show.
Thank you so much, Debbie, for having me.
My pleasure. Merry Christmas to you, Emma.
You too.
You've been listening to Competency Number 5, my bi-weekly podcast on maintaining presence when we coach, lead, and live our lives. This episode concludes a podcast for this 2023 year. We'll resume our efforts back in mid-January 2024. I wish you all the very, very best for the holiday season. Take good care. And if you'd like to reach out to me about my coaching services, you can find me on LinkedIn under DG McCullough, or you can check out my website, hangingrockcoaching.com. Do take care, and we'll speak with you again soon. Bye-bye for now.